Thanks, everyone. Good afternoon. I know it's been many talks today, and there's a few more to come, so I'll try to keep it short and simple, hopefully. So I want to tell you today about some work with Chris Lauman and Vadim, they're both in the audience, on the finite size scaling of MBL phase transitions. I think over the course of the talks today, we've seen some of these pictures. So this on the y-axis is energy density, x-axis is some parameter that tunes, for example, the variance of disorder. And we've heard about transitions from interacting localized phases, MBL, to delocalized phases. Tarun was emphasizing ETH in the last talk. The delocalized phases could be more generic. They need not satisfy the strong assumptions of ETH. David also mentioned that there can be transitions within the putative many-body localized phase itself. And one unifying framework to view these transitions seems to be that as statistical mechanics is not the right description for these localized phases, perhaps we need to zoom into eigenstates and start to look at their properties. Actually, we've heard a lot about entanglement entropy this afternoon, which associate with eigenstates, and that perhaps that is what diagnoses that the physics that is going on at finite energy density in these problems. So I already said this, because each one of these phase diagrams involves at least one localized phase, and the localized phases not described by statistical mechanics are some of the standard tools of RGN field theory need to be used with care in describing this phase diagram and these transitions. So one useful way to proceed, given that we don't know how to think about this transition, is to see what general constraints we can impose on it should it exist. Okay, and so let's go back to one such very general constraint in disordered systems, which is due to Harris from 1974, known as the Harris criteria. Okay, so a simple scenario for this criterion is, let's go back to a traditional transition we understand, an ordering transition. Delta here could be the reduced temperature. So it's a function of temperature. As you decrease, go through TC, the magnet orders, and you go from a paramagnetic phase to a ferromagnetic phase. What I've shown here is, if you're doing Monte Carlo simulations, this is a snapshot of a typical picture you would see here. Black spins are up, white spins are down, and in the ferromagnet, you have an ordered background with a few puddles of down spins. Okay, and here's the transition, a second order transition, the Ising class for this picture, which is characterized by a diverging length scale xi, which diverges with the reduced temperature delta as delta to the minus nu. So the question that Harris was trying to answer was, what happens when you add a little bit of disorder in this parameter delta? Okay, so a simple way to ask whether this physics that you saw in the clean case could persist is to do the following division. So what you do is you say, okay, I added a little bit of disorder in delta, and I have a mean delta now denoted by delta bar. Okay, and you say, okay, so on the scale of the clean correlation length xi, let me estimate what the fluctuations of this delta are, because delta is no longer just one number, it's a random variable. So it has its mean value, and it has its fluctuation given by central limiting theorem to be 1 over square root the size of the box. The box is picked to be of size given by the clean correlation length xi. And so then you do a simple estimate that when the fluctuations in delta in a box exceed the mean, then it no longer makes sense to say that the average value of delta is even given by delta bar, right? So it's inconsistent to claim that the clean transition physics survives with disorder. So it says that if this is true, the clean fixed point is unstable. So what the Harris criterion is really a criterion for the stability of the clean transition when you add a little bit of disorder to it. So you say, if this correlation length exponent nu is greater than or equal to 2 over d, d here is the spatial dimension, then the clean critical point is stable to the addition of weak disorder. So that's nice. It's a general criterion of the system. But you notice that it makes reference to a clean transition. And in particular, for the audience here, we're interested in the physics of localization, and interacting localization doesn't persist. There's no clean analog, right? So we would like to we have a criterion that doesn't rely on a reference transition. And so there's a generalization by these authors, Chase, Fisher, and Spencer, CCFS. It was too big to put it in my title. Almost 12 years later, after Harris, I think, and they had two insights to remove this reference clean transition in this discussion. The two insights are these. So first is they said, well, what we should really be thinking about is a probability distribution of the order parameter. Notice in the previous slide, there was a random variable, which was delta, but we didn't think very deeply about this. And the second very important insight was that we should frame the criterion in terms of finite size scaling. Okay, so then we don't need a clean transition. So let me redo the same phase diagram I did with the Harris one. So now we have a same phase diagram, but now we imagine we're tuning it by some parameter associated with the disorder, for example, the variance. As you turn up the variance at some point in the phase diagram, you go from an ordered phase to a disordered one. Okay, so here's the prescription of what they want you to do. They say, okay, first, fix some value of delta, fix some system size, you have some particular sample, measure the order parameter y for the sample. In the problem here, it could be the magnetization, it could be the surface free energy density. I can go into details if you're interested. But you measure the order parameter y, which basically distinguishes between the ordered and disordered phase. And you do this over and over again, generate lots of samples, and generate a distribution. Okay, so that's the first step. Generate a disordered distribution for your order parameter at fixed delta and system size. The next step is to do finite size scaling. Okay, so I'll be specific about what I want on the y-axis, what aspect of the distribution I want on the y-axis for a moment, but for the moment, imagine median, moment, like mean, something like that is being plotted on the y-axis, versus delta at different system sizes, okay? So the blue curve here is the answer in the thermodynamic limit. So the order parameter for which this could be true in our problem is a Binder's cumulon would have a jump like this. If you asked what is the probability of the percolation of the white spins, that would have a jump curve like this. The magnetization wouldn't have a jump, but I just wanted to pick one that had a jump for simplicity. So this is what the order parameter does in the thermodynamic limit. It jumps. Okay, but at finite size, it clearly becomes a crossover. So at red, for example, say you took a 100 by 100 sample, you get the red curve. 1,000 by 1,000 sample, you get the black curve. You see that it's narrowing towards what happens in the thermodynamic limit. So these kinds of curves let you identify a finite size scaling window. Okay, so delta finite size is a function of L, which is basically, you know, how broad is this crossover at the system size L. And you see that this finite size scaling window is going to get narrower. What we want to do to derive a criterion is that we want to lower bound this finite size scaling window, which is the same as upper bounding what this derivative is here. So basically, you want to know how fast can my order parameter change at given finite size as I vary delta. Okay, so that's what they reframed the discussion of Harris in terms of this finite size scaling analysis and asked, can we bound the finite size scaling window and so derive a Harris-type bound on the narrowing of this window? So the derivative that I had in the previous slide, there's a very elementary upper bound that you can derive irrespective of what the order parameter is. This is a quick slide just giving you the intuition behind it. Let's represent our disorder distribution as follows. The probability of a particular disorder distribution, for example, I don't know, this is a cartoon. Let's write it as e to the minus capital E. Just in the suggestive way, because we're so used to doing stat mech, and this way now we can imagine doing stat mech with respect to this disorder distribution. And then you see the following. Any derivative that I want to bound of any mean of a bounded random variable x, its derivative with respect to delta is always going to be upper bounded by a kind of disorder susceptibility. Okay, so hopefully this is somewhat familiar to you. If you ask how quickly is magnetization changing with the field, you know, the susceptibility tells you that answer. So it's something similar here. How quickly can an order parameter change with the delta? Well, the disorder susceptibility tells you what it is. And if the disorder is generated by a local energy functional E, the susceptibility is extensive, which generically ends up giving you this bound. Okay, so Maybe this is intuitive, maybe it's not, but you can actually just rigorously derive this bound for any disordered distribution. But if with this bound in hand, you can now make up Harris criteria. So let me review the ones that Chase, Fisher, and Spencer considered. So I'm calling that a tail theorem because the quantities that they bounded were percentiles, like the median. Okay, so they said, remember, y was our order parameter. So they said, plot the median of the order parameter y versus delta, which controls which phase you're in, at different system sizes. So that's red, black, and green. As we said before, there will be a narrowing of the finite size scaling window with system size. As you increase system size, this gets narrower. Under some technical assumptions on the tails of distribution that I'm not going to go into because it's not illuminating, I think, they were able to show that if the finite size scaling window is narrowing like this, then this new finite size has a lower bound, which is 2 over d. Okay, so this is result number one. I've been kind of careful in writing fs here because this nu is not the nu that Harris was thinking about. That was an intrinsic length to do with a clean transition, and he had a stability criteria. This is a finite size scaling exponent, which has nothing to do with the clean transition, which has obeys a bound very similar to the Harris one. Okay, and the way, and I've tried to draw it this way so you could see how you would measure it. Plot the median of the order parameter at different system sizes, do finite size scaling, extract an exponent, and check if this is true. So we derived a complementary theorem on the mean. Okay, and I say complementary because the assumptions that went in are different, and also from the percentiles, you cannot bound the mean. So in this work, what we did was use the same inequality I showed you about how quickly a bounded random variable can change a delta to derive the mean theorem. So under the assumptions that we have an order parameter y, which is a bounded random variable, which obeys a finite size scaling ansatz like so, we can show that for any short-range correlated quench disorder, the nu that appears here in the finite size scaling ansatz must satisfy this bound. Okay. I don't know if you how many Harris bounds you've seen, but the Harris bound that I had before was 2 over d, and you'll see that this is a different bound. It's a weaker bound, and that's because it's actually just a different bound. We can construct distributions where the mean has this finite size scaling ansatz and can saturate this bound, whereas the percentiles obey the original bound. Right. So the takeaway message from all this is that we've added to the Chase, Fisher, and Spencer way of thinking. They were able to bound tails of the order parameter distribution and its finite size scaling. We have a complementary theorem on the mean of the order parameter and its scaling under a different set of assumptions. Okay, so I want to now go ahead and apply it to at least one of those eigenstate transitions. And I'm going to consider the one that's come up the most thus far, which is the MBLT TH1. So let me state clearly what I'm assuming. I'm assuming that there exists a localized phase, a delocalized phase, and some kind of direct transition between them that obeys finite size scaling. Okay, and now the goal is to ask if this is true, which order parameters will give us, can we extract finite size scaling exponents from, and would those satisfy Harris criteria? That's a setup. And as has been emphasized before, it might well be that these transitions are not characterized by single parameter finite size scaling, in which case none of this is valid. Okay. So let me consider a quantity that came up in the last two talks. So hopefully now you're all experts in this. I don't even have to explain this curve. What is being plotted here is the mean entanglement entropy density. So Tharun described how he would imagine calculating it, right? So this is, you take an eigenstate at the appropriate energy of interest in a given sample, look at a subregion, calculate its entanglement entropy, and you know, calculate statistics of that and take the mean of it, and divide by the size of the region. Okay, sorry if that I went over that quickly, but this is precisely the quantity that Tharun was talking about in the last talk. Okay, so it seems to be that this is a good order parameter for this eigenstate phase transition. Why? Because, as we've heard, in the localized phase, there's evidence that it satisfies an area law, i.e., that this quantity is going to go off to zero as you take in the thermodynamic limit. So the red curve here is what it does in the thermodynamic limit. And then at the transition, it does something we don't know, and it's not important for what I'm going to say. And on the other side, it jumps to a volume law, and in fact, not just to any volume law. The number here is set by the thermal entropy density. Okay, that's the assumption that this was ETH. So this is the curve in the thermodynamic limit, and this looks like a reasonable order parameter to try to do finite size scaling with. So let's do that. So under this finite size scaling ansatz, okay, so let me just guide you through the three parameters here. L is system size. L sub A is the linear size of my subregion A. As you all know, when you look at entanglement entropy of a pure state, you need to trace out some subsystem B, and you have a subsystem A left. So that's a parameter in here. And delta is how far away I am from the transition. Okay, and this is, I'm writing down the ansatz for the mean entanglement entropy density. So I have a generic ansatz like this on the right. I see that it's a function of two parameters. One is the ratio of L over some, you could write this as L over delta to the minus nu, so L over some C. And the other is the ratio of the subsystem size A to the full system size. Okay, and I've allowed for a general scaling up front. Okay, so this is my ansatz. I assume this. Now assume this exists. Then we can make some number of conclusions. The first is from the plot that you saw before. You saw that entanglement entropy density jumped at the transition, right? It's not important what it does at the transition. It was zero on one side, and it was non-zero on the other side, and it jumped. That means this A is zero, okay? So this is very easy to check. Just you can see that for this ansatz allows for a jump only if A is zero. If A is zero, and we have a bounded random variable here as our order parameter, we can go ahead and apply the mean theorem that I discussed, and we obtain this bound for the finite size scaling window of the mean entanglement entropy density. Okay, so this is one of the results of this work. One of the order parameters that has come up as diagnosing this eigenstate phase transition between MBL and ETH-like phases, if a finite size scaling ansatz applies in the vicinity of its transition, then a Harris type bound exists for that exponent nu that controls the finite size scaling window. If the technical assumptions of Chase, Fisher, and Spencer apply, then the percentiles or the medians will also be controlled by a finite size window, which satisfies the same bound. But I mean, I've separated these ideas out because, like David brought out, we don't know what these distributions do. They may be broad. The median and the mean may do different things as you approach the transition. And so I find it clearer to have both these bounds, and they apply in different under different set of assumptions. Okay. That was an example where things worked and we were able to derive a Harris bound. Let me give you an example of another quantity where things don't work and we cannot say anything, just so you know that it's not as if, you know, it's not as if Harris bounds should just constrain all kinds of quantities. So let me give you an example where it doesn't work. Okay. I think we'll hear more about this quantity tomorrow in Dima's talk, but it's been proposed that this G of L, which is defined as follows. So basically, take your Hamiltonian, which with quench disorder, apply a local perturbation V, and ask how effective is it in hybridizing nearest neighbor eigenstates. Okay, so somehow the picture is that in the localized phase, nearest neighbor eigenstates and energy are very, very different. The matrix elements connecting them are tiny. Local operators are very ineffective in hybridizing them. Whereas in the putative thermalizing phase, the local operators are very effective in mixing them. So effective, or in what sense? Quantitatively, you want to estimate this matrix element and ask how does it compare to the scale of the level spacing. This is just a cartoon, but in the MBL phase, it exponentially goes down with L. And in the ATH phase, it exponentially goes up with L. So this is great. You see something that's exponentially sensitive to which side you're on. And you might think that this is a good quantity to look at as you go across this transition. Just to mention the references, Dima, I think, will talk about this work tomorrow, where they do look at this quantity in numerically for the Heisenberg model, random Heisenberg model, and in the Voskius and Altman RG, as well as the Potter Wasser Primation RG. I think this is somehow they have a phenomenological RG in mind, in which they have some parameter like this that's being coarse grained, but it's not as microscopically defined as this. Okay, so great. Why can we not say anything about it? Why we can't say anything about it is in this paper. So unsurprisingly, because we have a quantity that's exponentially sensitive to which side you're on, it has broad distributions, right? So I've taken a characteristic plot from this work. So what's being plotted here is the logarithm of this quantity I defined in the previous slide. So that's this curly G. And they plotted at various system sizes. Let's just look at the green curve here, which is at system size 16. And this is their local perturbation, by the way. And they are in what should be the localized phase. So all I want you to take away from this slide is that as you increase system size, this green curve here is going over, 25 orders of magnitude. That's a really broad distribution. Okay, so it has really fat tails. We can show that both theorems that I introduced here, those are by Chase, Fisher, and Spencer, and that by us, both don't apply. And for this quantity, there's no Harris bound on any scaling window that we can put on it. So this is just to tell you that what you really need to think about is you need to go in, if you have a candidate order parameter, you need to go and look at its distribution and then decide if the assumptions of these theorems apply. And sometimes they do, in which case you can bound it. Other times they don't, in which case there's no bound. Okay. So why all this effort to produce Harris bounds? The numerics has reached some rather, like, there's been many works, actually, and they've all looked at different models, and they all find let me lead you. This is two different works, one by Luis Lafleurency and Fabian L.A., another by Jonas Kjell-Bartersen and Frank Pullman, two different models. The quantities here are, one, this is a level spacing parameter that tells you if nearest neighbor eigenstates repel or not. This is a variance in time and entropy. Not very important exactly what they're plotting for my purposes, just that these are all candidate order parameters for the localization to delocalization transition. They can get it at all these different system sizes, very impressive by exact eigenization standards. They can do finite size size scaling collapse. They do, and then they produce nus that are all like 1, right? And this is in 1D. The Harris bound tells you that nu should be greater than or equal to 2. So all numerical studies that I know of violate the Harris bound for quantities. These quantities, I want to emphasize, they both obey the constraints for the mean theorem, and so if they have finite size scaling ansatzes, then their finite size scaling window must be constrained by the Harris bound. Okay, so what's going on? Well, what's going on? A simple answer is, we're not in the asymptotic regime, right? And that's probably true. We're not in the asymptotic regime. But we can do a kind of simple-minded analysis for we can estimate when we definitely have to get into the asymptotic regime as follows. So what I'm plotting here is the finite size scaling window delta, right? So remember, that was how broad is this crossover? Same here, how broad is this crossover? As a function of system size. Okay, so numerics, depending on the quantity, produce they have some apparent scaling off this finite size window with nu star that violates the Harris bound. What it means that it violates the Harris bound is that it's going down pretty quickly, and in fact more quickly than an absolute lower bound that we can give from this from the one that I derived. Okay, so that there's a constant C and a constant K, not important. What we should focus on is this L dependence. Okay, so this is the absolute lower bound. This is what they're apparently they're seeing. And so you can just extrapolate these curves and say, okay, how long could this possibly go on? So very conservative estimates, again, this depends on which quantity you look at, is that this can go on up to, like, at most system size 500 to 5,000. Right, so this is, I'm not claiming that we need to go to system size 500 before we will see physics of the asymptotic regime, but this is merely saying it's somehow the worst case scenario. This scaling cannot persist beyond this point. But I hope the point, one of the points of our works is to say that under the assumptions that that you are doing finite size scaling collapse of this plot, the new you should extract has to be greater than or equal to 2 for these quantities. Okay, there is time, so I will say. Things that I didn't go into, but we can think through, is applying the same criteria to the other eigenstate phase transition phase diagrams I put up, which is to think about general transition between localized and delocalized, not just ETH satisfying phases, and between transitions in the localized regime. The bounds, depending on the specific transition, the bounds are weaker than Harris. They're not always as strong as the Harris bound that I showed you. We can generalize the entire discussion to correlated disorder, power law correlated disorder, and get modified Harris bounds. We can apply it to scenarios where there are multiple diverging length scales, as well as to first order transitions, which we're not talking about. That's it. I'm done. I hopefully provided some intuition about why finite size scaling exponents nu obey a Harris bound at the MBL ETH transition, and for various quantities. Well, I discussed the mean and time and entropy density, but we can show it for other quantities, including the mean level spacing parameter. And I want to just indicate going forward what are the things that we can constructively try, at least numerically, to find, to maybe get closer to the regime and of, well, at least testing either finite size scaling fails or if we recover exponents that satisfy Harris. So one easy thing is to actually use Gaussian distributed disorder. All the studies thus far have been done with box distributions. The Gaussian distributed disorder has a technical, in our bound, it has a technical advantage. And two is at least central limiting theorem is not emergent. It's you put it in. So I don't know if this is important, but it's worth redoing studies. The second is the obvious. We shouldn't just look at means, but also at medians and at the entire distribution. And finally, a cautionary tale. Collapsing the tail. So you saw I showed you various quantities, which show crossovers. But if you weight the tails of the finite size crossover, it could lead to a nu which has a smaller apparent nu. And we know of examples like this in the infinite randomness RG case. So this is just something to keep in mind that what you're really doing is you need to focus on the crossover region, not on the tails when you're weighting your finite size collapsing data. Well, thanks for your attention.
Well, in the context of the randomizing model, when the Harris criterion is not satisfied, as for the usual, there was a more interesting point that was found by Khmelnytsky, that you have a new fixed point that's associated with the randomness. Is it possible to have something like this here? That there is a new order parameter, and the new, well, that you they found in field theory in 4 minus epsilon dimensions, that had again a different new that was satisfying the Harris bound. So the question, does it happen here? And then the scenario that came, that if this does not happen, there is really no sharp transition. There is something like a phase full of Griffith's points. Is it possible also here?
So as you said, whatever consistent theory you find in the end must, if you have general bounds for it, must obey Harris bounds. Well, we don't. we don't know. So there's no the best estimates of exponents. There are two ways that exponents are estimated. One is numerically, and the system sizes are very small, and they do not find a correlation length exponent that satisfies the Harris bound. The second is there are two phenomenological real space RG studies. I think we'll hear about them, and they do find exponents that satisfy Harris bound. The issue there is that one doesn't have, as they're phenomenological, one doesn't know what the microscopic relevance of the order parameter being looked at is. So. Yes, that's right. But yeah.
Because I guess what it builds in scaling, and scaling has to, even if you don't know the field theory, has to build in that there is a fixed point. You don't understand it, but it has to have in mind.
I don't know that it builds in scaling. I guess it needn't have flown to infinite randomness, so I don't know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But if you have an RG that gives a fixed point and an order flow, you've got scaling. Right?
Yes.
So in the analogous of the dimensionless conductance, G, that you plotted there, you say that the distribution is very large, but if you take the logarithm of this quantity,
yes, yeah,
wouldn't your arguments apply to this?
Yeah, no, so, sorry, that was just illustrative of you need to be careful of what you apply it to. Indeed, the log of G would be, there's evidence that it's normal, at least normally distributed in the localized phase. The answer to that is I don't know. And the reason I don't know is because I don't know what it does at the critical point. I don't know if it satisfies the assumptions. If log G satisfies the assumptions needed to bound it. So I know that G doesn't. That's why I presented it as a counterexample. But indeed, the thing to look at there is log G. I don't know.
Is there other questions? Oh, one more.
Does your argument for the Harris criterion suggest why you might see an apparent new that doesn't satisfy the criterion at these small distance scales?
No. It's just, so what it does is it's a strict lower bound on the scaling window. And at the system sizes that are considered, it was like that plot I made. It really looks like this. Numerics really estimates where they do their apparent scaling, they're up here. So the strict lower bound is down here. So they satisfy the bound. It's just that the scaling with L, eventually they won't, but lots of things will happen by the time they get L goes to 500.
Yes, last one.
Could you explain a little bit more about the scaling of G of L in the ergodic phase? You said that it grows exponentially with size?
Yes, yeah.
So are you saying that I touch something here, there will be tsunami in San Francisco?
No, so G is... it's asking how well nearest neighbor energy eigenstates hybridize.
I'm sorry, this G of L, does it have physical meaning of the sensitivity of the energy levels on the local perturbation?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, you are saying that sensitivity of the energy level on the local perturbation is exponential of the size of the system.
If you could measure the entire eigenstate, yeah. But, I mean, it's a many-body eigenstate, right?
Okay, sorry. I touch it here. Is there a tsunami in San Francisco?
Well, it's not a tsunami. It's
Am I in ergodic state?
Yeah. I can say that. That's right. And then local observables don't, right? That's why it's in a state that satisfies, if it satisfies eigenstate thermalization hypotheses, there's no way to distinguish eigenstates locally. So it's consistent with that. They may mix in a horrible way when you locally perturb it, but you can't detect it locally. That makes sense in the worldview of tsunamis. There are no tsunamis, but if you were able to resolve many-body eigenstates and measure very non-local observables, then you can tell. But
okay, if I change the boundary condition, just apply the flux on the boundary condition, will the sensitivity of the level in this case scale exponentially?
Yes. Yeah.
Have you heard about conductance?
Yeah.
Right,
but these are many-body eigenstates.
There are many eigenstates, and some go one way and some go the other, so the average is zero. The individual ones are highly sensitive. All averages are not sensitive.
Look, I know I know about sensitivity. I know about sensitivity of the levels in the closed system into the change of the boundary condition. It is called Taurus conductance, right?
Yes. Yeah.
In highly excited states. Okay. Highly excited many body states.
So what? It still cannot increase exponentially.
Yes.
In yeah. System size, it can decay as a power law. It is more than enough to distinguish it from phase.
But this is not a conductance.
It's not the conductance.
It's not the conductance.
It's many body eigenstates.
It's just this. It's not even a Hermitian operator, right? It's look. This is literally how a local perturbation is it hybridizing nearest neighbor many body eigenstates or not.
Adjacent
in energy. Sorry. Yes. Yeah. So it's really the operator that you would need to be able to measure this physically involves as many degrees of freedom as the system. You'd have to do an L-body operator. That is the one, something like the projector. Am I on the eigenstate EN? That can tell, okay, yes, you've applied this local operator, change them. It is not inconsistent with your worldview that thermal phases are not locally distinct. You cannot make a local change here and just dramatically affect the entire system. Because local observables cannot see this change, even though eigenstates have changed dramatically. So anyway.
How do you change if you try to do it for levels that are separated by, let's say, certain energy?
Then it won't be an exponential set. So if you took, if V hat is order one, and you looked at levels, greater than the bandwidth of the operator you're applying, then they will not hybridize,
but
or they will hybridize weakly.
About scaling, if you study it as a at a given frequency.
It will, so the fall off in this should be order one in energy, but there are exponentially many states in there that will get mixed. Exponentially many in volume.
No, what I'm asking, if instead of n plus one, you put n plus k.
Yeah.
How it will.
You want to put fixed frequency difference.
Yes, yes.
Then, yeah, so what's happening here is the denominator is diverging
more
both going to zero. It's zero over zero.
Yes.
But the denominator is going to zero faster, right? And if you let the denominator not go to zero by fixing the frequency, the numerator is going to zero, so it'll decay. But that's the problem with it. It's zero over zero, right? Zero over zero is always a difficult thing to work with.
Okay, let's stop the discussion here. And okay, so the next talk will be given by Bella Bauer from Microsoft, Interaction Effects in a System with Localized and Delocalized Single Electrical.